What's up, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally. I'm with Skip Hill and S2H. Our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. Guys, we got a bunch of questions lined up today. Skip, you've been coaching for over 20 years, I believe. S2H, you've been in the bodybuilding world for a long-ass time, and you know a lot more than most people I know. Now, you guys like the way I did that? For anybody who's watching this show that hasn't tuned in before, I've been following these two guys for a long time. They've got a lot of really great bodybuilding information. So we are turning to them. We're going to do a Q&A. We have a bunch of questions lined up here from the Advices Radio Facebook page. And guys, on that note, if you're watching this on video right now, if you want to check it out on audio, we've been doing bodybuilding podcasts for I can almost say half a decade now over at advicesradio.com or search Advices Radio on your favorite podcast app. All these shows and more are available there. What's up, guys? You ready to do some questions about trend?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. I posted a thread over at the Advices page today. It's a picture of a cat with a hand holding a gun for a tail. I did that to try to appease both of your tastes.
It's not going to work for Scott, I'm sure, but...
What kind of gun is it?
That's what somebody said. They were like, why is he holding a Glock?
I don't know. Probably one of the most dependable handguns ever manufactured. That could be part of it.
I think that was it. Yeah, I think it was a Glock. I can't remember, though. I don't even know. I'm looking at it. I'm not sure. We did a show and tell before we started the show, Skip. I showed my gun to Scott, and he showed me several fire. He brandished several firearms for me.
Nice. I've got a Kimber.
Oh, no, please don't.
Subcompact 9mm right here sitting next to me.
With a laser scope. Always is.
With a crimson laser, yeah, absolutely.
The three of us are ready right now. You realize
that? The
other
one's in my car.
Like, if people wanted to, like, mess with the guys from Blood, Sweat, and Gear while we're recording.
Start sending it.
Do you realize how many hits we would get on that video? If all of a sudden, well,
it might get banned on Facebook. I wondered about that the last time I, you know, showed off my firearm, because right. Facebook doesn't like things like that.
No.
Only if you have a negligent discharge.
Yeah.
Then it would go viral.
Well, listen, I don't even know how to approach this, but, you know, I got to get kind of serious. I don't want to take the whole show to like a dark place, but we can't avoid it, man. Bad shit has just been happening in bodybuilding. First of all, I literally just saw news tonight that John Meadows had a heart attack. We don't know any of the details on this yet. I talked to Scott Stevenson, who happens to be watching right now. Shout out. What's up, Scott? And he doesn't have any details at the moment either. But man, he's such an important person in our sport. And, you know, I think all we can do is just really, you know, have him in our thoughts. And if you pray, have him in your prayers. And let's hope that, you know, we can keep the mountain dog here, because we need him. You know what I mean?
As does his wife and kids. Absolutely. Yeah. It's hopefully he comes out, you know, comes out of this okay. And, you know, like you said, there's not a lot of information there. There was some question about the clotting, and, you know, it's so early. I don't want to sit here and be like, oh my gosh, it could be this, it could be that. But there are those questions that we just spoke about a couple weeks ago with the clotting issues that they can't explain, where COVID is somehow fucking with hemoglobin in that younger demographic. So, you know, it's pure speculation. It's probably, I don't want to go there. Be honest with you, I just hope that he's okay. Like you said, you know, he is definitely needed. He's a great, great guy, great for the sport, about as humble as they come. And of course, his, you know, his wife and kids, you know, need him more, quite frankly, than the bodybuilding world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just, you know, the world needs people like him is what I think it comes down to. You know, and with that said, this comes to us on the heels of great loss to the world, really. I'll say, I was going to say the sport, but great loss to the world. Luke Sandow passed away just a couple days ago now from the time that we're recording this. That was nothing short of just shocking, I think, to all of us in the sport. I don't really have a lot of words for this. You know, we were planning on like, you know, after, right after this happened, Ron had said to me, hey, you know, do you have that? Can you get that clip of when Jose was talking about him? And I thought he was thinking like we do like some sort of like a montage of clips and stuff, you know, like in memory of. And honestly, so that was Thursday. I haven't even begun to look at that stuff until just today. Like I just couldn't even like, you know, all these different news organizations. Well, I won't even call them news organizations. Bodybuilding outlets are doing, you know, all these like tributes and stuff. I just honestly, man, I just couldn't do it. You know, I just couldn't wrap my head around it.
Yeah. And I think on the one hand, I mean, I understand the respect that people are paying. On the other hand, I'm cynical. You know, the older I get, I'm a little cynical, and I question sometimes the motives and sensationalizing it for personal gain and things like that. And I know that's not that fair, and it shouldn't matter really anyway.
Yeah.
But that's just my cynical side. So it's just horrible all the way around, and it brings to light the constant issue with predominantly males who you know, we don't want to talk about our shit. We don't want to put it out there. And I don't know that he did or he didn't. But it still highlights the fact that there's a lot of us keeping a lot of shit in, dealing with a lot of shit. And sometimes it's just the end of the line. And it's just hopeless is what it is. And it's very sad. Again, he was such an asset, such a good guy, such a humble guy, such a down to earth guy. And, you know, just like John, the sport needs those people because we have too many people on the other side that are just, you know, you just constantly eye roll and, you know, they're like nails on a chalkboard. And Luke was just he's just a great guy. And it's just incredibly unfortunate. I'm going to go so far as, and I don't want this to sound, people will take things like this sometimes out of context. It is horrible and it is sad. I wasn't surprised, not because I knew Luke. Or knew much about him because I didn't know him. But I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised by suicide, to be honest with you. I just think that there are a lot of people who get to the end of the line and it's hopeless and it's sad. It's horribly sad. And the other thing is I have to be very careful. It seems very reliable that the information is out there that he, you know, took his own life. If that's not the case, then I definitely stand corrected.
No, I think that's the consensus. I think you're safe in saying it. That's the consensus.
Yeah. So sad, terribly, terribly sad.
Yeah. I liked him because he was, he was a guy that started out, you know, we all knew him. A lot of us people who like podcasts, we knew him from the Size Game before he even turned pro. So that gave like, you know, guys like me in America a chance to learn about him and, you know, get to spend time with him on the podcast. Just like anybody, I know everybody who's watching this show right now, you guys know, it's like you get to know the people on the podcast that you enjoy. And it's like before I met you guys, I felt like you guys were my friends when I listened to PED Radio because we spent,
we weren't.
No, we still. Go ahead.
You're not even each other's friends.
We don't even like each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a marriage.
But, you know, you spend 2.5 hours an episode with someone that, you get to know them, you get to care about their lives. And, you know, he was a guy who was very open. And the cool thing was, is that as, you know, he turned pro and he was, like everybody keeps saying now, he was destined for great things and that it didn't change him. And I thought that that's what was really cool, that, you know, I just saw him back at the Arnold, running around backstage with James, and you could tell he was just having fun with it. And when I saw him, he was very friendly and cool, just like he's always been. And the year before I posted that video where we ran into him literally right after the Arnold was over and he had taken third place. Now that was the second time he competed there. And the first time he got like eighth place and it wasn't really it wasn't what he would have wanted. Obviously nobody wants to take eighth place, but we all saw like the potential, you know, and then to see him back there. Like, we had just seen him. He was talking to a sponsor, and then he was like going to go grab his stuff. And then he saw VJ and I, and he was like, "Hey, what's up, guys?" And he was like, "I can't believe this." You know, he was just like, it's just like, imagine if it was like the three of us. You guys, you know, I see you backstage, Skip, and you're just like so excited that of this great thing you just did. And it's kind of like this, there's like this inside thing of friends where you can be like, holy shit, can you believe we're at the Arnold right now? And I just took third place. Like, it's, it was mind blowing, you know? And I can't say that like we were best buddies. I didn't know him super well. You know, we did a number of podcasts together. I got to have some cool conversations with him, you know, not to the point with like some of his friends had, like James. You know, I really, my heart goes out to the people who are close to him right now, you know, because if we're hurting like this, not having been super close to him, you know, what they're going through is something that's going to last, you know.
Well, Ben is a good example, yeah. Because, you know, I was there at the Arnold with you, and I remember having a brief conversation about it. And I thought, you know, I could, you know, because I know Ben, I didn't know Luke, but I thought, you know, I could probably get a chance to touch base with him and see Ben and, you know, and meet Luke, because I had never met him before, knew very little about him, but knew he was a down-to-earth guy. And quite frankly, for Ben and Luke to be that tight, Ben is about as humble and down-to-earth and cool as they come, too. So I knew that Luke, you know, if those two got along so well, Luke had to be, you know, kind of same fabric type of guy. And it's funny or ironic, I guess funny is a poor word, but I thought, yeah, you know, I'll meet him. It's not a, you know, and then to look back and go, wow, fuck, there's a regret. I mean, yeah. I had the opportunity to kind of touch base and meet him and to meet Ben, because I've never met Ben face to face. I've worked with him a couple times and know him, you know, through the internet and the relationships that you have with your clients and that sort of thing. But gosh, it kind of just makes you go, you know, sometimes there's not that time you think there is.
Yeah. I just met Ben this last year at the Olympia, and he was like, the first words out of his mouth were, "Oh, I used to work with Skip. He was my first coach."
No kidding. Yeah, he's a great guy. And you know, the two of those guys, their training and stuff is very motivational and inspirational too, because it's more in the trenches. It's the training you wish you could do. Yeah. It's moving, you know, 10 plates on the squat in chucks and you know, you just look and you go, that would just blow out the disc in my back and my kneecaps and everything else. And Luke was that type of guy. He was an in the trenches kind of guy.
Yeah.
He trained like a fucking animal or a beast. And I think that part is appealing. And then you add the fact that he's humble and he's down to earth and he's approachable. And God, I'm sure there are plenty of people who go, God, you know, if I was a pro, I'd be just like him. Mm. So, you know, I hate to call it a legacy, but if there's anything there that he can be remembered for, I mean, that's, I would think that he would find for a lot of people who didn't just want to be a pro, but wanted to be a pro like Luke.
Yeah. I like the way you say that. I do. I think that probably resonates with a lot of people. It's interesting, man, because, you know, Fuad put out a podcast with Ben and with James, and I was looking at the comments, and the number of grown men who were saying, like, man, I've been in tears all day. Like, you know, there was one comment, one guy was like, I've never understood how someone can be upset when someone dies and they never knew him, but I get it now. Mm-hmm. Whew. To the number of people that he touched, I mean, I don't know. That was a pretty big deal. It's interesting, man. It does. I don't want to dwell on this in a, you know, think about it in too long of a dark way, but man, it is a tough week here, you know what I mean, in bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I do think that emotions are running higher with this whole quarantine thing that's going on.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't help matters at all.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think the I don't know, it kind of cuts to the bro community. You know, and social media allows us to get closer to a lot of these people than we otherwise would have been 10, 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, you do, just like you said, you know, you do feel like you know them, and, you know, when you follow and you know their background and you know the type of person that they are and that sort of thing. And, you know, like I said, I think it pulls at people's heartstrings, because it's just sad to know that he was, you know, battling probably for quite a while with a lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't ever know, mental health's something that you, from a periphery or even close to somebody, you may not know that is an issue. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I mean, that's why I don't read like the internet crap, because I'm sure there's a bunch of people going, wow, but somebody that did that well at the Arnold do this, you know, commit suicide. And that's just, to me, it's just not understanding really what mental health happens in people's mental health and what issues they could be having. Because everybody looks at it from a surface level. And, you know, it's one of those things where you can't judge, you know, the book by the cover always. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I had someone I know well that took their own life for certain reasons. And it was one of those, man, you'd have never thought that mm-hmm. person would have done that, you know, and knowing that person fairly well. So you don't, you know, it's one of those things where you can't, you know, you just got to say to yourself, hey, it's a sad thing. Maybe I can, you know, look deeper into somebody I know if they think that's going on, but you can't really judge it from the periphery, you know, by someone's accomplishments. I mean, look at all the rock stars that have committed suicide when they're on top of their, you know, Chris Cornell, Chester Benning, it's a guy from, Chester Bennington. I mean, those guys were like on top of the world, and people want to say, well, how could they do that? They were famous rock stars. Well, you know, that's where you can't really judge from the periphery. It's a, you know, it's an issue, and especially a lot of veterans and different things like that. So it's hard to Jay. It's hard to know, but you just got to try to support people.
Well, I think it's difficult to understand the expectations that are placed on people. You know, it kind of cuts to the fact that people don't understand what the stresses are and the expectations at that level, whether it be a rock star or a professional bodybuilder and that sort of thing. And I don't know, because I don't know Luke's situation. But I would speculate that there was probably a lot of stress. There was a lot you know, the expectations and not being good enough. I mean, you get to that level and continue to push at that level to go even further because you're not, in a sense, you're not satisfied with the achievements yet that you've had until you reach that pinnacle. And I think that people who haven't been there or haven't been around people with those types of expectations will find it difficult to understand that where a lot of people who haven't achieved very much will see what he has done or someone like him as a massive success. Yeah. He may not have seen that way. Now, I don't know him. I can't speak for him. But I'm saying in general, I think that it's safe to say that a lot of people don't understand the expectations and that he may not have felt as successful as the other people think that he would have.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I know, you know, we talked to him. It was interesting. I don't know if you listened to that. I sent you, Skip, that clip, or really I pointed out where the clip was in an episode of Drugs and Stuff. That Dave Crossland had some really interesting questions for him. We talked about when he did the California Pro and he messed up his peak and he you know, blamed Chris on it, and then he just kind of like disappeared. And he said during that time, he was like, he just like bugged out, you know, mm-hmm. he dropped off the face of the earth. He said he was questioning, like, maybe I don't have it in me to do this. Maybe I'm not good enough. You know, he was literally questioning himself, you know, that like maybe he wasn't a good bodybuilder. You know, he had a lot of, and I guess that's the thing too. Like you can appreciate how cool it would be to have like a good sponsorship, be on top of the world and, you know, have the popularity. But, you know, with that comes pressure, I guess, too, you know, mm-hmm. pressure to maintain that.
I mean, you don't really know though. It could have nothing to do with bodybuilding.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, like I said, just try to support people. If you think there's a problem, educate yourself on it as best you can. And, you know, it's, you don't really, you don't really know what the person is going through unless you're in their head.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Agreed.
I agree. I can only speculate, you know, and kind of look at, you know, some of his friends that have talked now, and it sounds like, you know, people that were close to him, they've said that this has been something that did plague him for a long time. And kind of to what you're saying, Scott, that it was something that was around before he was a bodybuilder. You know, this is something he's been dealing with. But anyway, you guys want to dive into some bodybuilding talk here, getting some questions and stuff?
Dive in. dive in.
All right. We got one question.
Great, Skip.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We've got one question here that I've missed now for like three episodes.
Oh, he's not listening anymore.
No, he wouldn't be, you know. And I told him, since I was like, Scott's, I'll get it next time.
Scott Stevenson's listening. We have to use proper wordage. And all right. I'm going to get my Theosaurus out.
Theosaurus? All right. Here's my question. He says, hey, Scott, here's my question again, LOL. Currently running 700 milligrams a test, 500 EQ, split over 4 days during the week. He's 62 years old. First show ever is in October or November, and he will be 63. He's currently 15% body fat. He's thinking of adding MK677, looking to add some Tren or Masteron 8 weeks out from the show. And let's see. Was prepping for the show that would have happened this weekend. How screwed up is that? So he's thinking about, he's looking to add in Tren or Masteron at 8 weeks from the show. And he's thinking of adding MK677. He's 62. By the time the show happens, he'll be 63. Currently 15% body fat. And like I said, just to reiterate, 700 test, 500 EQ. This will be his first show ever. Anybody, either you guys want to jump in first? Thoughts? Let's maybe start with the MK.
Get some growth.
Yeah. I was going to say the same damn thing. I really was. MK versus nothing. Okay. MK versus growth. Go growth. Especially 63. I mean, a small dose of GH is huge the older you are. Would be a significant difference between using MK. And because Dr. Scott Stevenson is listening, I am going to defer to him saying that loses effectiveness after, roughly 4 weeks as well. So it's not something he could continue to run, you know, straight through, where he could do that with growth hormone and get, much more benefit. When it comes to the Tren and Masteron, take them both. One, they're not the same type of compound. So to pick one over the other, I mean, if he wants to pick one, run Tren. I hate to be jump on the Tren bandwagon, because that's not usually my approach. But if I have to pick one over the other, run the Tren and then throw in the Masteron to free up more testosterone from the 700 milligrams of test that you're taking now.
Would there be, what if he's never run Tren before? I don't know.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Okay.
Well, I don't know, because we don't know what type of, I mean, I understand that he says he's 15% and everything. I'm assuming, and again, I'm being presumptive, but if he's going to compete in October, so, you know, it's possible that he's probably going to do Masters Nationals at 63 if he's got a, you know, pretty good physique and he's going to go to that level, then I think that'd be great. And if he throws in Tren, you know, at 2 or 3 mil a week, he'd probably see a hell of a, you know, a hell of a kick from it. But again, we don't have a ton of background on it. We don't know what he looks like other than the fact that he's 15%.
We could assume maybe he has used it, because that was my only thought, is like, with side effects that come with Tren, do you want to risk seeing what happens with Tren in the last 8 weeks if you've never used it before?
You can get away from it pretty quick. But I mean, if he was supposed to do a show this weekend, I mean, he's been prepping for a while.
Mm.
So if I was advising him, because he's got, 5 or 6 months until he's going to do a show, something like that?
Well, if it's Masters Nationals, it would be roughly 21 weeks.
Yeah, it'd be October, November, that's like 5 months. I'd tell him to go and just cut it back right now to like 300 milligrams a test a week.
Yeah.
Especially if he's been on that other dosage for quite a while. And then, 6 to 8 weeks out, then I would start bringing other compounds back in. I mean, he's never done Tren. He could start low, like 25 milligrams every other day or something, 50. And if it doesn't work for him, then he can just dump it. I'd probably put a few orals in it 6 weeks out coming in. I'd drop, if it's a long ester test at 6 weeks out, I'd go to a short ester test, that mass P, maybe 300 of each. And then, put in some Anavarp or Viron, Windstraw, something in that realm. But I'd get on GH if I was him,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it just depends. I mean, you don't really know his background. You don't know how long he's been dieting for right now. But I'd probably get away from that 700, 500 for a while because you're not going to want to run that all the way up. Especially EQ messes with your hematocrit and stuff, your RBCs. Mm. So, I mean, I would probably dump that out. I don't know why he's pinning 4 days a week. It's like every other day, I guess. Maybe it's just a volume thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd probably cut it back for a little while.
These 15%, though, it sounds like he was supposed to have a show last weekend, but he probably backed out and knew that that show was canceled, mm-hmm. you know, a month or so ago because he would be leaner than 15% if he was prepping the entire time.
But he's still been on that same, that 1,200 milligrams of that mix of the two. So I'd probably back off for a little while.
Well, it's a long time to go with that EQ dose. Yeah. That I completely agree with because the middle of October would be 21, 22 weeks. And if he's going in November, you can add another four to that.
Yeah, just cut back like 200 or 300 a week for a while. Give yourself a little break because at 63, he's probably having to use a fair amount of aromatase inhibitors. I'm going to assume, but he probably has to use some at least and, you know, kind of take a break from all that and then ramp it back up 8 weeks out. I like the 6 week mark to start kicking everything in, all the short esters, the orals, but still don't go crazy on them. You know, just maybe 25 R, 25 per Viron, something like that. And then 300 and 300. I mean, it's hard to say, though, because I don't know what the dude looks like. That we don't know what his background is.
Right.
I mean, he could have been trained his whole life. He could have, you know, I mean, not that 63 is really old, but you got to be a little more cautious, too, because you don't know health considerations and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a guessing game. But I think GH, 2 to 3 IUs every other day, would do him wonders.
I think, too, that, you know, just to kind of go back to what you guys were initially saying about the GH, that, you know, a couple of units for a guy who is in his 60s, you know, because, you know, a guy who is in his 20s who takes a couple of units of GH. And I can tell you my experience when I was in my 20s and I used a couple of units, the results were different than now. Like, I can tell the difference being in my 40s using growth. Like, I can tell the difference in my recovery big time. It makes a difference. And the older you are, you just to kind of throw this out there, the less GH that you're producing, so the greater benefit you're going to get out of taking a couple of units. I know that now Scott never said like it stops working after 4 weeks. We did look at a study where it with one result they had, it stopped working after like within the first week. They did a draw after one day and the guy was getting good results, and they did a draw after a week and there was no benefit. Like it just had returned to normal. So there is some unpredictability possibly with it, and you're relying on your own natural production.
Yeah.
Which I think that, you know, that's another level of, you know, being unpredictable is whether or not your natural production is going to, you know, you may have a great experience where another guy doesn't, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely person to person with that, with 6-7, MK-677. Because, you know, you may have nothing to give. You may have a lot to give. You don't really know.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. Let's see. We had a bunch of stuff. So if we can, I'll see if we can run through any of them. If there's any of them that we can run through faster. Let's see. This guy says he wants to stay anonymous. I'd love to hear a discussion on one of the podcasts about pharma-grade GH versus Chinese generics. General assumptions below. I hear pros on podcasts saying that generics are crap and fake, and not remotely comparable. I've also seen lab testing with generics and hormone levels being very elevated to prove legitimate on boards. If generics is used to have more, to have more comparable result. Anyway, what are your thoughts versus, I guess, generics and versus the quality of farm grade?
Take it, Skip.
Well, I got to be careful how I word this. I was going to go farm grade GH for the first time year or two ago, and I was talked into using all four of the different generics that were offered.
Okay.
And I did, because I was told that it, you know, that it was really, you know, it was great, great growth. And fucking A, it was. Basically, I was talked out of using the farm grade GH. And I'm trying to be careful here. And it proved to me that I don't see the benefit of paying for farm grade. Now, somebody could say, well, you haven't used it before. Well, I'll tell you what, the generics are so good now. And this is based, of course, on, you know, your source and how you're getting your gear and things like that. But I know that I will not use farm grade because the generics have been that fucking good.
You got to get good generics, so, right? That's the key.
I would even go so far as to say this. They were so sure that they were good that they gave them to me for free.
Really?
To try. I was free.
I like free.
One of each of the four. And that right there, it's like, well, you could have charged me for the farm grade shit, which is far more expensive. It was just kind of I'm not going to pass on this opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, there are some, you know, like as an example, the black tops don't work for me. They blow me up. And I can be lean, and I will hold a shit ton.
The black tops from that source.
From that particular source. Yeah, that's a good point. To the point where it was so bad that I would wake up at night and my hands wouldn't be asleep. My whole fucking down would be asleep. And I couldn't just move it like you think, oh, you're probably laying on it or something. I would have to actually get up and walk around for a couple minutes before it would dissipate.
Holy shit.
That was just a little too strong for me. So I played around and tried my and settled in on what I felt was the best for me, and it's been great. I would encourage people, if they have a good source and they can get good generics, if that is the route to go. Now, there is a caveat, and that is there's two things going on with China right now. Obviously, COVID, which is going to almost certainly impact the accessibility or the availability of growth hormone coming out of China, which is where it all comes from, basically, or large majority of it. And the other thing is right before COVID, there were huge issues with the production of growth hormone and in China, with them starting to monitor and increasing the crimes for exporting growth hormone and selling it illegally. So you have those two things coming down, and I would imagine that it's very difficult or far more difficult to get a hold of that growth hormone than it was maybe a year ago. So there is that to take into consideration too, I guess. I know if I was going to fake something, if I was a scammer and I wanted to make a shit ton of money, I'd fake farm grade shit before I'd fake generics, because there's so much more money in it.
Well, better keep an eye on Skip.
If all of a sudden I go into the gear business, you might not want to buy from me. Skip sounds Saristim's really, really cheap.
Yeah.
They're a dollar. I think one of the issues, if there's an issue,
yeah,
is how they travel. So if you're a kind of person that's going to get a generic, it's going to depend on how the product is cared for while in transit. You know, peptides don't do well when they sit in 100-degree mailboxes for 3 days. Mm-hmm. So that's what I heard. You know, when they're bounced up and down and you know, they're not stable, they're left in a bunch of light or whatever. So I think there's a travel issue with this is just my thinking out of the box, a travel issue with some of them.
That makes sense.
Then there's also the other end of the user end. Are they reconstituting properly? Are they like leaving it out on the counter for like 6 hours when they forget? And then they're like, oh, shit's no good. Well, you left it on your counter in the sunlight for 6 hours. You know, or you got the bright idea to shake it up or something. So, yeah, I mean, those amino acid chains can be broken up. But I think this is just speculation, but I think in the past when there's been some generics that got bad press or did not test real well, it was the care of the product.
That makes sense.
You can probably see where, you know, the care of the product is not or was not or may not have been at the top of whoever's list was sending it to transit. There were some tests done, I don't know, it's been a while, probably 10 years ago, where some generics got tested to see the actual purity. And it was kind of, I think it was out of 10 IU vial, there was some that were in the 3.5 to 4 range, and then there was others that were 9, 9.5. If I remember correctly, there was, you know, as far as lead content, arsenogenic stuff, you know, crap you don't want in there, that was all pretty clean, but there was some quality issues there. So it's hard to say. I mean, I can tell you from my knowledge experience, if they're running good, they're running good. If they're running bad, they're running bad.
Right.
You know, it's kind of just the way it is.
Yeah. And I think that with the source thing, I think that that's like, if you were to say in general, there's probably a lot of really bad generics out there. You know what I mean? Like, cause I've used generics that worked, but weren't that great. I've heard stories of people who've had generics that really were shitty. The key is really knowing where you're getting them from. Like, you know, it sounds like, you know, Skip, you knew a guy who you knew a place that they were fantastic. And I think that that's got to be critical, you know, and that's the consistency too, you know, that's what it comes down to. And that the color tops, once again, I'll just say they don't matter because anybody could put any color top on. So like, you know, Skip found whatever, these particular blue tops were fantastic that he had, you know, okay, great. But the blue tops I get are a completely different product, you know, so just keep
it could be. The other thing is price too. I think that a lot of times people get caught up in the price. I've heard, you know, clients and people tell me that they can get generics for, you know, $100 a kit and stuff. And I always cringe at that. There's nothing wrong with trying to save money, but you know, I know speaking for myself, I'd rather spend more money if I trust that what I'm getting is actually quality shit. So it doesn't always mean that because you spend more money that you get quality shit. I don't want to imply that. What I'm saying though is the cheaper it gets, I think it's safe to say the more likely that it's not going to be as good because it's cheap and they're moving it in volume. You know, it's I wouldn't pay $100, $100 and a quarter for a kit. That's just me.
That said, I would.
That's what I mean.
Sometimes, but only
do have. Yeah. And see, you have to understand, and I'm going to tell this to the listeners, and they may already know, they may not, and they might even be a little resentful for it. But because we've been in the industry longer, and we know the people that we know, it's more likely that we get better gear than they do. And I hate to say that, it's off of me now versus me 15 years ago when no one had any fucking clue who I was or gave a shit.
Yeah.
So it is different. It's just different. I mean, it's, you know, I've been involved with, you know, by invite only sources where they contact you and say, you've been referred by this person. It's all on the down low. You can't pass this on to anybody else, but this is what are you interested? That sort of, and to check with the person to make sure that they're actually not bullshitting. And all of a sudden you have a source that you're like, oh my God, this shit is just off the hook.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a lot of things that I think the average person may not have experienced yet when it comes to gear and connections and that sort of thing. So I'm speaking from that. You know, people ask me all the time about black market shit on the internet, and I'm like, I just don't know. I haven't dealt with black market gear in, I don't even know, 15 years maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you do make a point though that like, yeah, that it's not the place to go shopping for the best deal. That's not the first thing you're looking for is the cheapest thing, right? That's not like what you're looking for. That's not the number one element.
And I know Scott, you've been around long enough. Getting EQ in a Visine bottle and tabs taped to, blotter or not blotters. Well, blotters too, I guess. Redicat, things that
I have never gotten EQ in a Visine bottle. I can tell you that.
Haven't you? Do you remember? You remember Redicat? I mean, everybody knew Redicat. The tabs were in. They were double-sided tape and things like that. You know,
I heard about
IP and things like that. And apparently he's still around, and I'm shocked by that. But nonetheless, that's where I was at the beginning. I was just like anybody else. I was trying to, save money. I didn't have a lot of money to blow. I was trying to raise four kids, and my wife kept spitting out kids left and right. I had no fucking money, so I had to be cheap about it. Blame her for my lack of gains and lack of having any real money to invest in my Mr. Olympia run 20 years ago.
Well, there's also been runs of places that have had, peptides, Exorelin, GHRPs, IGF, and they just relabeled and capped them.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that you can actually, if you know what you're looking at, so I hear, you can look at them and you can tell the difference by the way they puck, but you really have to know what you're looking at.
Right, right. And that's why I had written off IGF from when I had used it in 2004, 2005, and had no real interest to come back to it and did not speak very highly of it for years. And then I came back to it and was like, oh my fucking God. Well, I probably had shit cheap, low quality IGF that didn't do a goddamn thing. And then all of a sudden now, or within the last few years, I have quality IGF that works fucking incredibly well. So again,
I hope you thank that person that hooked you up with all that. Gave you that good word.
Take him on the show. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
Have him on the show.
We got like 100 questions left, so I'll try to find something we can move a little faster on here. Okay, here we go. Skip, I'll start with you on this one. Jake asks, how do you get your clients to track their macros? I've tried to work with people here and there through the years, and it's always been the same issue. I can't get them to track anything, or even get blood work for that matter. Then they just want to see a plan out of the blue, providing me with no data. I prefer to have someone tracking their eating habits before I create a plan for them. I tell them to give at least 3 to 4 full days of normal eating tracked. I prefer 4 to 5 days. I like to start with some small changes into their diet so I don't overwhelm them or leave them with room things to change down the road. This all sounds familiar. I'll say this out the gate, if I may jump in first, Skip, just to say that, Skip, if I were to hire you, I would be hiring you because I'm very serious and I want to get the job done, and I'm probably going to be paying for that service too. I think that the longer you've been around, like you, the less likelihood you're going to deal with this.
Right.
People are coming to you because they know who you are. And they're like, hey, I want to do this right, and I want to have Skip help me, So they're like willing to do whatever it takes, I assume.
Yeah, I think that, and I get this a lot from clients. They feel like sometimes that if they're not on 100%, even if they fuck up, even just minor, they feel like a burden, and that they have let you down.
Mm.
That cuts to the fact that, if you're going to pay someone $1,200, $1,500, $1,800, or you're going to pay someone three, and I don't know what, Jake charges or how long he's been doing it. I don't know. But there are plenty of people who are going to charge $300 or $400. And quite frankly, I mean, the large majority of the time, there are exceptions, but the large majority of the time, you are getting what you pay for. The people who've been around for a long time and have the reputation, they're going to cost more. It's, So when people come to people who have been established for a long time, have a reputation, and they're paying significantly more, they're usually serious. Not, you know, it's not like I don't have clients who don't struggle. Sometimes I do have clients who struggle, but it doesn't happen very often. That's why when you were reading what he was saying, I was thinking, yeah, I don't have people who don't track and don't give feedback, you know, very often at all. I mean, other than, you know, if someone's going through some shit and, you know, they have a family crisis or they have, you know, even right now going through all this COVID mess and everything else, I know speaking for my clients, they've been incredibly resilient, resourceful.
Yeah.
I'd say 95% of them are still continuing to train. Some of them are continuing to prep.
Yeah.
And they may not even have access to a fucking gym or a home gym. And they're doing everything they can do to stay on track, with the exception of only just a couple.
Yeah.
So I do. I think that there's, you know, that investment in knowing who you're going to, knowing who you're working with, and spending money. I mean, money, you know, I've said a million times before, don't ever work with anybody for free, because they're going to, they don't see any value in what you're giving them because they're not paying for anything.
Yeah.
So there's no value. There's no, you know, it's uncommon that someone is going to be as dedicated or as motivated and focused when they don't have any skin in the game.
Anything you want to throw in there, Scott?
You can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
There you go.
And I say in my experience, well, I'll tell you experience doing coaching people matters, because at some point, I can't give you the exact amount of time, but you can figure out who's doing what they're supposed to be doing and who's not.
Right.
And it may not have anything to do with pictures. It may have to do with the communication that you're, after a while it's like, okay, I can tell if someone's is full of shit or if they're committed, you know, it's not that hard to figure out, but but if you're newer to it, let's say first couple of years, and you're only working with a couple of people, you sometimes tend to put the burden back on yourself when they're not making improvements, because you're not certain. You think they're doing what you're telling them to do.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to weed them out, because if they're not making improvements or if they're, it's not going in the right direction, you know, over time you can figure out who's really being straight up with you and who's not.
And a lot of it is communication. I mean, it's almost, and I can't explain it, I can't give you specific examples, but it's almost like you're reading between the lines. And then you go and you ask another couple questions to dig and kind of poke. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can go back and forth with a client only a couple times, and they will just spill their guts. Hmm. And it's almost like they feel like, oh, well, he's asking this question, I already was entirely truthful. It was a half, you know, the best lie is a half truth. You know, that's I've told my kids that for the longest time. And I remember that from working with kids long ago in residential and juvenile detention. But best lie is a half truth. So you're not necessarily getting a full lie. You're just not getting the entire truth. And if you ask a couple questions and you dig a little bit, you have to be very careful, though, too. And I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but you have to be very careful to not be accusatory. Even if you can sit there and you can know your client is fucking up, but you can't go, look, you're fucking up. You can't come at it that way. That's just not a professional way. You want them to tell you, not you to tell them.
Yeah.
I'd say too, when you talk to them like on the phone, you get a lot clearer picture sometimes verbally than you do through emails.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hesitations, you know, things like that. If you're not sure and you can't get it through not text, but through writing and communication, emails and however you're communicating with the clients, yeah, get them on the phone, have a conversation with them. Absolutely.
All right. Quick answer I need from you on this one, Scott. Does a stick of deodorant belong in the bathroom cabinet or on top of your dresser in the bedroom?
If you bathe in the bathroom, if you don't bathe, by the way.
Exactly. All right. Or you can have two. You can always have one next to the bed just in case you want to, you know, a quick application before, you get busy.
All right. Do you think an AI is necessary on 300 milligrams a test per week? I know this can depend on the person, but in general, there seems to be a big push against AIs unless they are running much higher doses of test. I've been on anastrozole for some time now with my TRT at 0.25 milligrams twice a week, along with 300 milligrams of test. But if I decided to drop the AI, what should I look for? And what should I do if I start to notice estrogen sides? Yes, I'm aware that 300 milligrams is a bit on the high side. Oh, Alex caught that. We were probably going to say that for TRT. But so far, this has been where I feel the best. Who wants to jump in on this one first?
What do your labs say?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that he probably expected that response, and I agree with you 100%. But I think in, I think his question cutting to in general.
Yeah.
I would say in general, no, 300 milligram in general. I would run it without anything first, and then see where your levels are and if you need it. But I wouldn't go to Arimidex. I.
So it's 300, it, 300. If I don't use it a lot, at least 1 milligram every other day, it's.
It's a mess.
It's a mess.
Yeah,
but that's not typical.
I mean, for my age, it's probably not untypical, but depends on the person. Just get labs, look at your labs, see where your estradiol numbers are, and that can be the judge.
Right. Still, Arimidex wrecks your fucking cholesterol. You know, your lipid profile. If you need anything at all, go low dose Aromacin.
Ooh, Matt Marshall has a little fun fact here. He says. Most people apply deodorant right after they shower, which is the worst time because of moisture. Ideally, you'd apply it right before bed every night.
Hmm. Really?
What if you don't shower before bed?
Now he's saying not to apply it before you shower. He's saying just before bed, period. Unless, yeah, if you shower right before bed, then you've got a problem, right?
I got to change my habits.
What if you shower in the morning and you go all day with no deodorant? No.
No, you don't do that.
Yeah. Plus, you got to get antiperspirant. You got to put a little bit on your taint.
I'm gonna
just a quick little rush over your taint too, right before you put it on your armpits. You got to have that shit. You got to be fresh everywhere.
I got some real talk for you guys. 2 days ago, I woke up. I went about my whole day, and I was getting ready for bed. And Victoria said, "You're wearing the same thing you wore yesterday." I forgot. I didn't even shower. I was wearing the same clothes I was wearing since yesterday. And I went to, like, I didn't even think about it.
I'm rubbing off on you.
I blame the quarantine. But then I pulled my shit together and I was like, no, we're not going to have another day like that. Anyway. Why does it seem like,
yeah, no sex day.
Yeah. Well, it was actually, now that you mention it.
Exactly.
Yeah. The musty nuts.
Like, no, I'm kind of tired and you stink.
Oh, my head hurts. Why does it seem so many bodybuilders are addicted to Afrin? Boom, boom, boom.
God damn, really?
Oh, dude, I have such a problem with my sinuses. I remember on Geared Up, them talking about prevalent use. I've never understood why bodybuilders seem to use it more than the general public. I don't know if it's a general if it's a bodybuilder thing, honestly, but I had a deviated septum when I was 15. Pro and con to this, I had a girl sitting on my lap in the car. It was one of those situations where we were leaving the high school half day and pretty girl was like, "Oh, there was no room for her." She was like, "Oh, I'll just sit on Scott's lap." And I was like, "Yeah, all right." And then we got rear-ended at 40 miles an hour, and we were at a dead stop. Oh, her head came back,
shit.
And my nose just blew up. Got a deviated septum ever since. So,
okay, well,
shout out to Kathy Ramsey.
You'd have been all right.
Shout out to Kathy Ramsey.
Was it legit there wasn't enough room, or were you banging her? Let's be honest.
No. We didn't bang.
Really?
No. I mean, it was going to happen. You know, that was like, that was a potential. I ended up dating someone else. Like, it was one of those points. You ever realize, like, when you're a kid and you're single, you go through these phases where, like, you don't have a girlfriend, and then all of a sudden there's, like, four girls at once that are all, like.
Yeah, I've never had that problem.
No, I haven't either.
You go through those phases where, like, no one's talking to you, and then, you know, all of a sudden. It was one of those phases where, like, I just had started high school. And there was literally like three or four girls and she was one of them. And then I ended up not dating her. I dated another one. But yeah, shout out to Kathy Ramsey for breaking my nose. I am freaking. You guys don't have any nasal spray addictions like I do, I assume.
I've never heard of it.
I don't know anybody uses it.
Now you do.
Not, until you mentioned it, I had not heard that that was an issue.
This is my nasal spray. This is my backup. And this is my backup for my backup. They all ended up on my desk right now somehow.
You double nose it or one nose it?
One nose it.
You don't do the double?
It's a good idea, though. Now that I have three of them here, I could do that and still have one left.
I don't know anybody uses it.
Mm-mm. Huh. I can tell you that there is a relationship between your nasal passages, the membranes, and estrogen. Victoria's been looking into that. There is also erectile tissue in your nose, which can become, that's one of the reasons, you ever hear of people getting stuffy noses when they use Viagra? That's a potential side effect.
There's a headache.
Yeah.
Sinus headache.
The reason that you can get stuffy noses is because, from what I understand, there's erectile tissue inside of your nose. So.
Well, I guess all my tissues in my nose then.
That's what your wife says too.
And I've got bad allergies. I've had allergies all my life. That's a good question though. I can't answer it.
Skip's gonna go buy a bunch of Afrin.
No, I'm not. I'll tell you this, I'm keeping Afrin away from my dick. I'm just gonna let you know that, because if you're using it in your nose and it's taking care of the erectile tissue, keep that Afrin away from your dick. You don't want any issues there. No.
Matt Marshall said, I was thinking it could be a size thing, like dealing with CPAPs, having a big neck, stuffy equals stuffy nose. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. We got another question here. It says, I'm looking into hiring a coach. This is kind of a long one. I'll see if I can sum it up. It says, I've been looking into hiring a coach for a while. I thought about waiting until this public health crisis is over. Figure that I'll ask some questions about it here. What generic things do you think a client should, particularly clients focused on competing, should have beforehand to facilitate working with a coach? Like, is there any particular skills or items they should have on hand? Or should you have experience with PEDs before you consider working with a coach? Or even a certain attitude about being coached? Or about bodybuilding overall? Are there any prerequisites that you would say would make, say, a perfect client in your mind, Skip? It says, would you say an in-person coach or an online coach would be more flexible in this regard? Or does that even matter? With that in mind, how do you recommend novice clients who may lack some of these things engage with a potential coach who could enhance the coach client relationship? I think he's thinking about this a lot. He's got a lot of time on his hand.
Pay on time.
Yeah. Oh, there he is. 8:12. Yeah, it's about on time there.
Yeah, he's leaving work.
Here's my response. The only thing that I think that a client needs to bring to the table is the ability. It's two things: commitment and the ability to execute. I know that other people will say, well, you know, some trainers will only take competitors and some trainers will only take really good competitors. And some people may only work with people who are natural or take gear or what. Okay. Speaking for myself, I'm not like that. You need to be committed and you need to be able to execute. The other thing is this online trainer versus an in-person trainer. That's a personal preference. The only thing I will say is this. If you're going to want to meet with someone in person, you're going to really limit the quality of coaching that you can get, because you have to get kind of lucky that there's actually a good coach in your area.
True.
That has room to work with you. At least online, you have access to a broad array of high quality coaches. Now, some would say, well, they're not. And I get this every now and then. And it's funny because it's the older guys who tend to do this more than the younger generation. They say that online coaching is nowhere near as good as in-person coaching. Mm. And I think that that is doing a disservice to the fact that most of us have been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years. There's a system in place, and we know, you know, it's like looking at pictures. I can look at pictures in shitty lighting and I can tell right away whether there's a lighting issue, or if someone has great lighting and they look great, I can tell that it's the lighting issue and not the fact that they're much better than they were 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Nice dramatic side light coming in all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Dude, you lost 20 pounds and got ripped.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that when you deal with, I personally think online, and I understand that's going to sound biased, but I'm not telling you to call me and work with me. I'm saying if I was a client and I wanted to work with somebody, I wanted the best coaching possible, I would go online, because there's so many high quality coaches to pick from versus, and I live in a very urban area. There's a lot of trainers here, but I still would go online. The thing is too, is I think that a lot of people appreciate the flexibility of not meeting with someone at an exact time because everybody is busy.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more flexibility with the client trainer communication and relationship when it is online as well. So, you know, there's pros and cons of both. Like, essentially that comes down to a matter of preference though. And I never look, if somebody says, you know what, I'm going to work with someone in person, I wish them well. And that's, you know, that's great.
Yeah. And hey, you know, what are your needs? If you're let's say this too, if you're a novice client, you know, you may have the room to learn a lot more from somebody who isn't, you know, like you don't need to hire, you know, I'll just pull a name out, Chris Aceto. You know, you don't need to hire Milos if you're just getting started. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you could learn a lot from somebody who's probably going to be cheaper and, you know, possibly maybe more local. I don't know. But I think mm-hmm. you're right, though. You make a really good point. There's a lot more room. What about things that he should be like have on? Like I had a guy who just messaged me. He's like, hey, I listened to the shows. Shout out to him. I know he's a cool dude. He's made some artwork for us and stuff, too. He said he's been having some problems with consistency, and he wants to, you know, get his shit back together. And once he does, he asked me if he could hire me as a coach. And he said, listen, I'm not a competitor. I don't plan on competing, but would you still take me? You know, I feel like to me, that's not a thing. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to be I think for a good coach, maybe there are people that are like, I just want to work with competitors. You know, but I think for a good coach, so any like you'll work with anybody who cares, right? Anybody who really wants to put their heart into what they're doing. Like, that's to me what an ideal client is. Someone who's got the passion to learn, right?
Sure. Yeah, committed again, and the ability to execute.
I mean,
that's really all it comes down to. I've turned away a few clients over the years who I take their information. I see where they are. They say they want to get better, and their last show, they were absolutely shredded and looked relatively full. I'm like, I don't know what you want to improve on other than adding size. And, you know, or I look at their diet and what they're doing and everything. I'm like, you really don't have something that needs a much of an overhaul here. This is just a time, and I can take your money.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, and I don't think anybody else is going to be able to completely, you know, overhaul. You don't have things that you're necessarily doing wrong here. I've done that on a handful of occasions over the last,
I could see that,
you know, three, 4 years. I think that's just being fair. I think it's just being honest, kind of, and professional. You know, in the end, you have to answer to your results. So, you know, if you have someone who is, you know, can get into retarded shape. I mean, I'll use someone as an example just because it comes off the top of my head. Nate Spear, if he came to me and said, you know what, Andrew Berry's a dick, I don't want to work with him anymore, and, you know, I want to work with you because I want to do this. I honestly would tell him there are a ton of different ways. If you wanted to skip load and do it and get to the same, okay, cool, but you're not going to get any tighter. You're not going to get any leaner than Andrew is getting you.
Yeah.
You grow in the off season. You've got your relationship with him is, and they've got a relationship anyway, because, you know, they're friends and they've worked together for a while. But the point is something like that is a good example where I wouldn't touch it. That's just not something I can't. There isn't much to improve on there unless he was doing something. If I saw he was doing something the last minute, I'm like, oh, shit, he might be using a diuretic. He flattens out a little bit. That's just information I would give him to take back to his trainer and just be like, look, just look into what you're doing at the last minute. Are you hitting a diuretic too hard? Are you cutting water too soon? Talk to your trainer about that. But outside of, there's just not anything, you know, anything significant that I can do to improve. And that may sound like, well, what do you mean? You can't improve on that. He's pretty fucking good, and his condition is pretty damn good. You know, speaking of Nate. So a situation like that is an example off the top of my head that would where I would turn them away.
I'm going to tell Nate that you said you wouldn't work with him. Exactly. That's all I'm going to say.
Spread the rumors.
But tell Andrew that Nate has not approached me. In fairness. Yeah, you tell Nate I won't work with him. I'm going to tell Andrew, hey, look, Nate keeps contacting me. I don't know what to tell him. Oh, shit.
All right, I'm just going to jump to the next one because we have it. This is a question we covered before. He has some more information for us. Says, so this is Walter. He's a guy who is 250. He wants to be bigger than 250 in the next offseason. And we talked last time about like what he would do, what he would add, how he would do it. Anyway, he's got another follow up here. He says, don't know. Let's see. Follow-up answer says, I'm currently cutting for two shows, but back in my off season, I used to add maybe 50 carbs or fat, 50 grams of carbs or fat, and my weight wouldn't budge. I'd look fuller or maybe gain a pound or two, and then a week later, I'm back down to my previous weight. It even worked that way when cutting. Had to drop about 150 grams of carbs to see the scale move down. I give myself 2.5 hours between meals, which works out to be 2 hours after the last bite. The plan in the off season, December 2020, is to mix fast, medium, and slow carbs throughout the day, intra and mix of fast and medium carbs. Says I get one meal about 4:30 in the morning, and I space 6 meals out throughout the day from there. It'll be 2.5 hours between meals until I hit my workout. Then last meal post workout. He trains 6 days a week. He'll have 3 high days, and they're going to be on big body parts. 3 medium days, other body parts, and 1 low day, which is an off day. Any additional questions? Let me know. Here's some pictures for reference. So
what are high, medium, and low? Calories?
Yeah, I think he's got high. Like what he explained in the last time, just to kind of catch you back up, was he would do higher carbs, yeah, on the high days. And the question was, he was like, hey, I'm having a hard time. If I gain, you know, his question was, should I just jump to like 1,000 carbs? I think he was eating like 600 last off season. Should I just jump to 1,000 carbs? Because every time I add 50, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, if he's doing high, medium, and low days, but the scale isn't moving, I would question why there are any medium or low days. I mean, why aren't you running 7 days a week at high, especially if you're training 6 days a week? That's just off the top of my head, but I mean, I would immediately just go to the high carb days and see what happens, or, you know, the high days every day and see what happens from there. Mm. But, you know, I don't want my answer to seem redundant, but it's still a calorie game. I mean, he may have to increase more than, you know, the average person, or he may have to decrease more than the average person to, you know, to get leaner or to grow. But, you know, the worst part about growing, in my opinion, is forcing your body to utilize, assimilate more nutrients and handle more food. Hmm. I mean, it's, you know, I struggle like a motherfucker just to break 230 this last off season. And, you know, I that's just not very big. You know, he's 250 and he wants to get bigger. You know, he's probably having to take in more food, and I just hate eating. I hate being full all the time. I hate the distension. I hate the gas. I hate taking shits all the time. I don't like the heavy feeling, you know, breathing heavier, being full all the time. So that's the shitty part of gaining size. The only other thing I would question is, aside from the diet itself, I mean, if you're training 6 days a week, are you growing? I mean, you know, is your training, are you overtraining? And that could be holding you back a little bit. I think that focusing on the diet first is a good idea, but at the same time, don't leave the training out of the equation. You know, you need to make sure that you're responding well, and I mean, especially if you're high calorie and you're not able to gain weight, you should be growing at that point, like getting stronger damn near every session, if not every session, every other session, either in weight or reps. And if you're not, you know, I don't know how much growth is going on there. So I would look at both of those. You know, then you can get into gear. I mean, you know, too, but I would leave gear for, you know, gear last. But yeah, first thing I would say, the first thing I would say based on all the information he has given, if he was working with me, I would just immediately change all of his days to his high days for 7 days a week. And I would do that for a couple of weeks and see how he responds. And I'd go from there. Hmm. See, I think there's a misnomer to think that you don't need as many, especially when you're growing, that you don't need, you know, as many calories or as many carbs on off days. I mean, if you're not growing and your scale weight isn't going up, you don't feel like you're growing and getting bigger and stronger and progressing, then you need more calories on those off days too. I think the cycling of the calories is, to me, counterintuitive if you're not gaining and you're trying to gain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Why would you eat less? I know we talked about this with Dave Crossland too. And Dave Crossland, now granted it was a sloppy 415, but he pushed up to 415 pounds. I mean, he was a solid, you know, 330, and then he pushed to like 365. And it was like, it might have been less than 330, but he like gained a ton in first under construction film that he did. And then he pushed up to 415. And when he did that, he was eating, I think it was 8 ounces of meat and 2 cups of rice every hour on the hour, every hour. And he did. And I asked him, I was like, would you do like a lower carb day on your non-training day? No. He said, why would I do that? He just did the same thing. He never took cheat meals either. He just ate the same thing, kept the fats low.
Well, there was no room in his stomach to get a cheat meal. No. Yeah, you're never going to be hungry at that point.
Could you imagine that every hour?
Well, and you know, how long does it take to eat that? It's going to take you at least 15 or 20 minutes probably to eat that. Yeah. So you have about 30 or 40 minutes that you don't get to eat before you have to eat again. Fuck my life. I would take up badminton or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Checkers. Yeah.
And speaking of which, you got to cut to Scott or something. I have to grab a protein shake. I'm starting to get
kind of. I was about to say the same thing. Take it to a skip question. I got to grab some food.
Oh, shit.
I haven't eaten since like 2 o'clock.
I guess I'll man the show for the next minute. We'll call this a break, I suppose.
Three-second break.
All right. Hurry up. I'm staying.
You'll stay? All right. Well, while you're staying, I'll find another question for you. Let's see here. I know we had some other good stuff. Ooh, this is kind of a fun one. Jeff Black left us a question. I'll have to reread this now. You realize that. Now I'm going to have to reread this question for Scott when he comes back.
No, I'm going to answer it before he gets back. We'll go to the next one.
He actually says, what is your all? Your alls.
He's from Tennessee or Kentucky. Damn, yeah. Tennessee. Yeah, Tennessee.
What is your all's thoughts on the current state? It didn't sound right when I said that, did it? Current state of the fitness industry. Who emerges out of this as leaders and takes the next step career-wise?
I'm not sure. See, he's got a gym background because he owns a gym there. And I know that, you know, he was even interviewed.
The news.
I think it was for the TV news or something. Anyway. But I don't think that's what he's asking. It sounds like he's asking as far as fitness leaders. I thought he was going to go the route of gyms because I think that the corporate gyms are really in trouble. But
I think so too.
And I can't be sure. They're going to restructure. A lot of them are going to restructure in, you know, Chapter 11. But whether they come out of it, I don't know. You know, when you get out, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but the corporate structure for gyms is basically just very low profit margin but high volume. So when things like this hit, which are clearly unexpected, they you know, people tend to think, oh, they've got millions of dollars. Well, they do when they're up and running and functioning and everything's fine. And then, of course, when something like this happens, they take a huge hit. But I don't know exactly what he means as far as the fitness industry, as far as leaders. You know, because I look at the impact that it's going to have on online trainers. I don't see a huge impact in that sense.
Okay.
I think that what we're going to come out of here with is there could be more mom and pop gyms, smaller gyms with less overhead and less corporate involvement, but that's pure speculation on my part.
That's okay. You can speculate.
And it's so early, you know, it's hard telling, but you know, the other question is too, is are the mom and pops going to be able to hold on if this has to happen again? If it's going to be seasonal, you know, it's hard telling. A lot of them are already starting to fail. So I don't know exactly what he means by, if he's listening now, if he could comment, if he wanted to elaborate, that'd be great. Cause I just don't, what do you get out of it, Scott? I mean,
I think he means like people who are leaders in our community, but to talk about the gyms, I think that, I mean, I can tell you that. So I have a couple of few gym memberships. One of them is to a corporate gym, Crunch, just 5-10 minutes down the street from me. It's a great place if I'm between, like literally sometimes I'm doing podcasts or I have a podcast and then I need to do all my check-ins and I'll just run to the gym between those two events. And it's just 10 minutes away. So I'll train there versus going to either Mike Toller's West Fit or out to Powerhouse Novi or one of the other gyms. But anyway, that Crunch, literally they just opened at Christmas time. They marketed it so that they would get the New Year's resolutioners. Literally, there's this place called Edge. Exact same type of gym, same format, which they basically stole the Planet Fitness model of, like you said, cheap membership, include tanning, you know, all of that stuff. And Planet Fitness is a half mile down the road from Crunch on one side. And then Edge stole a bunch of Crunch's people at New Year's, and that's literally one block away. So within a half mile radius, there's these three huge gyms, and they're all closed right now. Yeah. I think one of them was going to have to pop anyway. You know, they weren't going to all be able to three stay there. I have a feeling this is going to push one of them out. Mike Toller, you know, he's plugging along. His overhead is lower. Westfit, it's a smaller gym. His overhead is lower. Granted, he doesn't have like a bunch of people backing him. He doesn't have a big organization backing him, but I do see that he could potentially weather this better than a huge business. They have this huge gym. It's probably got to be, you know, $30,000 a month just to keep the building open, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Now, I know that I feel that the online trainers have adjusted quite well during this mess to kind of help and set up, you know, like online information to help people to be more resourceful, to use the things that they, you know, have access to, whether it be resistance band workouts and things of that nature. Outside of that, I mean, I feel that from an online trainer standpoint, I think it's going to return to normal relatively quickly. I could be wrong, but I've seen a drop myself, but I still get inquiries and I still am picking up clients. It's just not like it normally would be without this mess.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that's going to be hit. I also wonder though, if people are going to invest, like if they're investing now in home gyms just to get them through, or if they're actually considering investing in home gyms so that they just don't have to deal with the bullshit if this happens again, and more people would actually be training at home versus going to a gym. That I don't know. That could be entirely up in the air. I think in our industry, though, the large majority of people, I think, will still continue to train in gyms because that's just their gig.
Yeah.
Did y'all mention that Gold's filed for bankruptcy?
We didn't mention it, but yeah.
Yeah, they're going to restructure, and there's quite a few. I know LA Fitness and 24 Hour, they're all kind of contemplating the same thing, which, you know, structuring, you know, 11 versus 7 is in two entirely different worlds. So if all they're going to do is file Chapter 11 and restructure, that's a pretty good business move considering the massive implications of being closed for the last, you know, few months. So I don't know the specifics of that. I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's probably too early to know, but outside of that, Scott, honestly, I don't know I really don't have any more of an opinion on it without knowing if he's asking something more specific about the fitness industry or, you know, leaders in our industry from an online standpoint or what.
All right. I'll go to another question then. If you want to run to grab your shake.
I'm about hypo. I got to grab
I was getting hypo.
Well, you haven't eaten since 2.
Yeah.
So that's like 6 hours. I 7 hours maybe. So you should be going hypo.
And I weigh more than you.
All right. So I posted that picture I told you, Scott, with the cat with a hand for a tail holding a gun. And Adam Billings said, why does that cat have a Glock? Why not a SCAR 17? I thought that y'all would like tough cats. What's a SCAR 17?
It's a big SCAR 308.
Mm-hmm. It's like a rifle.
Maybe the cat probably can't hold the big SCAR up.
Oh, that's it's a good point.
So she's one of Skip's cats. I'm not a big SCAR fan.
No?
I don't like them.
All right. Let's see here. I got a question about D-ball. D-ball, split dose or just pre-workout? Also, D-ball is always known as a wet drug. Is it okay to continue to use when cutting, or should it be only used when maintaining slash bulking? First of all, I wouldn't take D-ball just to maintain. I imagine if I'm using a steroid cycle, it's to grow some muscle, right?
Yeah, you're talking about oral D-ball?
Yeah. Well, you could say injectable too. Well, I guess injectable, you're going to take it all at once.
Well, the oral, I don't think it makes any difference to take it pre-workout.
Yeah, some people
people are into that, but you know.
Yeah.
No, I mean, most people get pretty watery on D-ball, bloaty.
Mm-hmm.
So, couldn't say you handle it, but no, I wouldn't look at it as something for cutting.
No.
I mean, you could use it. I mean,
Well, here's my thought.
You know,
one thing you want to keep in check is your estrogen when you're cutting. You don't want to diet with really high estrogen. That's not going to be beneficial for fat loss. And so for that reason, I wouldn't use it. I know people will use Anadrol, but that's because it doesn't convert to estrogen the same way that D-ball is going to.
Superdrol.
There you go. Which is super Anadrol, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I feel better now. Look at some food in me.
Good. Other thought would be, so splitting the dose versus taking it all at once. I know so a guy like Jordan Peters, he's really big on progressive overload, and he likes to use steroids as a pre-workout type amp me up, kind of like push more weight type thing, a strength thing, the way you'd take Halo. So like even in off season, he's going to use Halo or Methyltren, or maybe he'll use some D-ball, I guess. I think that's kind of what he's looking at it as, is something like that. Here's the deal. Maybe it could work for some people. You are going to have, so if the, you know, back in the day, we used to talk about keeping blood levels stable. My thought would be, you know, the benefits of stable blood levels are going to be less side effects. If you take the D-ball every day and you're doing great with it, more power to you. But if you start getting side effects, things like acne, for instance, instability in hormones will lead to things like acne, then you might want to consider switching that up. Going every day.
Yeah, if you take it every day,
through the day,
I don't care if you take it every day at the same time every day, your blood levels are not going to vary a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, for an oral. I think it's one of those things that you can overthink sometimes.
Yeah. Let's see here. Leo asks Tren Hex versus Ace versus Tren Enanthate.
I think Parabolin's the best one out of them all.
Yeah, and that's Hex, right?
But, you know, I'm not so sure how good the trend is anymore. Now it's not made out of pellets. So,
yeah.
I would say Hex was always best to me, you know.
Okay.
Treated me the nicest with some decent returns. Now, the long ester one, never cared for it much.
More side effects, right?
Yeah, it was the roller coaster ride.
Some people like it. I've seen a lot more blood pressure issues with it. Not personally, but with people I've worked with.
That I mean, Ace was great for about 3 or 4 weeks. And after that, it was just like, you know, you could rip the world apart for 3 or 4 weeks. And then
yeah,
for me, it was just like crap after that. It was like almost the polar opposite. Libido was about negative in the dirt and everything.
Here we go.
I'm not a fan of Hex.
No? You don't like it?
I was. And I think I touched on this before. I can't be sure, but I think in some way it helped to play into my cramping issues when I had problems a couple years ago. Hmm. And I know that sounds weird. I can't put my finger on what exactly it was. I don't know that it started to bog my kidneys. I don't know what the deal was. But I have gone back to Ace because Ace always worked so well. And I just prefer Ace. I don't prefer the every now and then cough, violent cough. But the compound and the results from it, I'll take Ace all day over any other form of trend. That's just me.
I'll take no trend now.
I have a question. My wife and I have been exercising, but we can't shake that bloated feeling. We have been loading weight little by little, but we feel bloated all the time. Is there any supplement that can help with that?
They both feel bloated?
Yeah. My wife and I have been exercising, but we can't seem to shake this bloated feeling. We have been loading weight little by little, but we feel bloated all the time. Do they mean loading weight, like lifting, like adding more weight?
I don't know.
I'd probably look at what they're eating because they're both bloated.
Yeah. I mean, dude, there's a lot of foods that can bloat you, right? Like, mm-hmm. Say, if you're not – I mean, if you're eating a clean diet, you know, a lot of times what we would call a clean diet, they tend to be foods that wouldn't bloat you. You know, like we're cutting out milk. You know, you're not doing like a big tall glass of whole milk every day with cheese.
Water intake's not very good, maybe.
There you go.
There's, I mean, if they're both bloated and it's a husband and a wife, I mean, I'd start looking at what you're eating. I mean, how much sodium? I mean, sodium's good, but there is too much sodium.
Oh, they said losing weight. They've both been losing weight, but they both feel bloated.
Man, that's hard. I mean, it could be a bunch of different things. I'm just saying, since it's both of them.
Yeah.
Maybe look at what you're eating. I mean, you're eating a lot of like broccoli and stuff because that tends to bloat people.
Mm. Oatmeal. Yeah.
Oatmeal. I mean, they could have a little too high carbs in their diet. Different kind. I mean, something's obviously, they're both bloated. I'd go to the likely subject of diet.
Yeah. What are your foods?
You know?
Mm-hmm. And you can eliminate one at a time, right? That would be one way of going about it.
Yeah, I mean, they might have started eating something they don't normally eat a lot of. Like, if I eat a lot of, like, broccoli, man, I'll get all bloated bad. That's why I hate broccoli.
He's asking us, because he's watching live now, he's asking us, is there any supplements we can take for gut health and for digestion? And I think that those things can be beneficial, but the first thing you have to look at, even if you're taking something that is going to help your digestion, you would want to eliminate the foods that could make you feel bloated to begin with. Like if I had an allergy to eggs and I were to take a supplement that would help me to digest them better, I still wouldn't necessarily want eggs in my diet. You know what I mean? Just because I could take a sup, I'd just avoid the eggs then.
Did they just start the diet?
It sounds like they're not too far in.
Okay, then that's probably more the bloated feeling. Because if they're, let's say, within a week and their calories are still high but they're clean, you know, that food may not be pushing through their system. You know, it's kind of like if I or anybody else, you know, you go off your diet for 2 or 3 days and you eat regular food and you come back, you're going to be bloated when you come back to eating clean food, and it has nothing to do with the clean food other than your digestion just isn't on track because you got a bunch of shit in your stomach that hasn't moved out. Complete. It's almost like you got sludge in there or something.
I think they've been going longer in a week though, because they, like he said, they've been consistently losing weight.
Well, look to the vegetables then, because like Scott's saying, if it's things like broccoli and things like that to bloat you, I'd stay away from myself. If vegetables like that for that
same. A lot of high fiber.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, they could be taking some kind of like, you know, some kind of like, I'll tell you, people get bloated from this. A lot of times you get on these smoothie type kicks and these vegetable smoothies and stuff. And some people just doesn't, it doesn't sit well with them. You know, it's hard to say. If it's going on for like months and months, that's one thing. It's been a couple of weeks. I just, like I said, I look at the diet, look what you're consuming that you didn't consume before.
Yeah. We are, we do have an affiliate with affiliate code, or not really in code. We have an affiliate link to Bio-Optimizers. They have a lot of really good, good digestive enzymes and probiotics. But that, you know, as much as I love their stuff, it's not the first place that I would start. You know, I think you guys make good points that look at your water intake. You know, if you're
diet soda will bloat you too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but it sounds like they're getting something new. So maybe if they started drinking diet soda now as a switch, there's that potential. Or any type of like additional sugar-free bullshit, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. Any type of, you know, we're going to start doing these sugar-free desserts. That could be it. But yeah, if there's something in your diet, eliminate one thing. You mentioned oatmeal. It's not only fibrous, but it's also a fermentable. It's a fermentable carb, so there's that.
Mm-hmm. You want to look at fake carbs too, your fake pastas, things like that that people tend to gravitate towards these days. I don't recommend it, but some people do that. If you're eating like a no-carb pasta or something like that, then things like that can mess with your system as well.
It could just be one thing that they're using consistently.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what the, like, you know, let me put it this way too. Like if you were working with a coach, that would be the answer. We would find the food. That would be our next goal, mm-hmm. would be to find what's making you feel this way, problem solve that. And you know, there's the benefit of working with a coach is that you have somebody who's seen this probably 100 other times plus in other people. You can fast track that stuff. Like you guys, mm-hmm. you guys said, oh, look at the broccoli. So you've seen that happen to people before. That may be one of the answers, but there's a lot of potential things. The only way to find out though is to work your way through it. This would be like using a digestive enzyme right now to fix this would be a Band-Aid in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
deodorant by the bed.
It's not likely a food allergy because both of them wouldn't be having the same. It's unlikely they'd have the same food allergy.
Sure. Well, guys, I think this is about all we have. Let me see. I'm going to look through here. We might have some more good stuff, possibly. I think. Oh, we do. We have a very important question. What does S2H know about these UFO sightings?
Dude, I have no idea.
I don't get into that crap. Covert knowledge.
I got a buddy of mine that I see a lot, and he is all into that shit. He belongs to all these YouTube channels for conspiracy theories, and bro, I don't get into that stuff. He drives me bananas sometimes. He'll be like, "Look at this video," and I have like this on the North Pole. There's like a circle in the ice, and I'm like, man, I just don't get into it. I mean, who knows?
I think that's what Scott was supposed to tell us.
Well, I think that they did say, I got to be careful because it could have been fake news.
I'm going to put it this way. I'll say one thing. Where most of this stuff gets seen, there are military installations in that immediate AO, so area, that are most likely where a lot of the R&D, research and development, is done. So, and I'm going to tell you this too, is there's a lot of drones flying around now, and not drones like your little DJI little ones you buy off the shelf.
Talking drones with lasers that will cut your feet off.
You know, Reapers, Predators, that kind of stuff. And there's actually a new drone, a Black Hawk drone that flies. And I think a lot of people are seeing non-commercial drones because there's a lot of, there's a lot of drone use by the military, by law enforcement, federal and state level, And I think a lot of it's drones that you're seeing recently over the last 10 years, 5 years, even closer than that.
I do believe still that those were things that Scott was told to tell us right now. Skip.
I don't know. I just finished my True Nutrition chocolate coconut bar protein drink. And I got to tell you, it was pretty good. It's a little thicker than usual.
Yeah.
So I have to add more. I don't even know. Maybe they sent me one with like more flavor. So I have to add a little bit more water to it. But it if you like your shakes thicker, it's pretty good.
I like my shakes thicker. Chocolate coconut bar.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to get that. I just got my team skip. I got a few more pounds of that on hand. And I ordered Victoria the pea protein isolate because she digests that well. She can't use like the milk proteins and stuff.
My go-to is still one scoop of cafe mocha with one scoop of French vanilla.
Yeah.
And I told that to Dante one time. He laughed. He goes, "That's what I do too."
Nice. Yeah, because just like two scoops of mocha, it's a little much mocha for me. That's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. Dante copies me a lot, though.
We all do, Skip.
Yeah, I mean, like, I do something, and then he does it, and then I don't understand why he wants to be like me, but I guess it's, you know, it's a burden that I carry, so it is what it is.
All right. Well, with all that said, guys, you can use our code ADVICES at TrueNutrition.com. I believe the codes weren't working for a minute, but they should have that fixed here pretty soon.
You don't have a backup code?
No, like none of the codes.
There's a backup code.
No, none of the codes. None of the codes. Oh, well, you could use the code SKIP, is it, or Team Skip?
Skip.
Skip.
Just as a backup.
As a backup. Skip
plus 15%. Though, they add 15% off.
Though
what is the discount for ADVICES?
We get the 5%.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. And they advertise with us, so that lets them know that their advertising dollars are going to something worthwhile. With that said, another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Skip Hill, S2H. I'm Scott McNally. Guys, let's keep John Meadows in our thoughts. And, everybody who was in the life of Luke Sandow. Guys, for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we'll see you soon.
Out.